Launching a book isn't easy, but it can also launch you into a whole new life.
What's important now is that I am a best-selling author, and that's awesome.
I found my soul on this journey. I found my purpose, you know, in life.
In this show, I talk to authors about how they launched and how it took them to the next level. Hi there. Anna David here, host of Launchpad, podcast all about books, launching them, and what they can do for your career. Kind of a big guest on the show today, just a guy named Adam Carolla. If you want the show notes, and you probably do because there's some really funny, useful stuff in here, go to launchpadpub.com/blog/Carolla. If you need me to spell that, that's C-A-R-O-L-L-A. And have I mentioned this is episode 317? So Adam Carolla has a podcast that is, it holds the Guinness Book of World Records, record for most downloaded podcasts. He was also the co-host of the long-running radio show Loveline, co-created The Man Show, does like a billion other things, has like a bunch of cars, drink companies, whole bunch of stuff. He is also the New York Times best-selling author of many books. His first book in 50 years, Will All Be Chicks, was on the bestseller list for 10 weeks. His newest book is a book that is closest to that first book. It is called I'm Your Emotional Support Animal. Now, if you are looking for politically correct, you are not going to find it in this book. I happen to really respect Adam, think he's really hilarious, and respect anybody's opinion. And so I was thrilled he did this podcast. He talked about, basically, he has launch tips, but his biggest tip is write a great book. He gets into it. And the way he says it is funnier than the way I do. So I hope you like this episode. With that, I'm going to give you Adam Carolla. All right, Adam. So your new book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, will be out by the time people hear this. Is this your fifth book?
Fifth book, yes.
Here's what I was wondering as I was looking through your books. Why do books? Why you have all these mediums that where you can communicate? Why do you do book publishing? Is a horrible industry. I mean, I know you've had New York Times best-selling books, but why even do them?
You know, I think people, pardon the pun, read too much into many of the things I do, including writing books. People say, why did you do Dancing with the Stars? And I always just go, because they asked. And that's my answer for most things. They go, what got you interested in and why? And I go, well, they asked. They offer you money and they ask you to write a book. And you think about how much money and how much time and what we're talking about. And then you do it. And nobody wants to talk about that aspect of it because they think somehow the material will be compromised because the fact of the matter is the first book I ever wrote was In 50 Years, Will All Be Chicks. And it was about 10 years ago. And by the way, that process happened a lot faster than 50 years. But they came to me and they said, hey, would you like to write a book? And I said, okay, how much money are we talking about? And it was like $350,000. And I said, oh, okay. But the good news is I'm glad I wrote a book. I would have never written a book on my own. They incentivized me to write a book. Now, they paid me to write a book, and I wrote a really funny, interesting, I think insightful book. And the process has worked that way all throughout. And I think people think like, oh, they came to you, they paid you money, so now what? I don't know. It's like going to a good restaurant. You came to them, you paid them money, and you got really good sushi. Like, it's not like, well, you've been bought and sold by the guy who makes sushi now. It's like, no, that's how life works. And I never mail it in.
And so, but didn't you do a book with Drew before that? Or does that not even really count?
Oh, that's interesting. I did, and in my mind, it doesn't count because we had like a ghostwriter. I mean, even though we fed him everything and told him everything, it was me, Andrew. It was like Loveline, the book. It didn't feel like me. It just felt like they wanted us to write a book. Love Line was popular, so we'll just write a book. But it never felt to me like really writing a book, like the subsequent five have been. So maybe I've written six books.
Yeah, I know what that's like, where it's hard to know what to count. I'm always like, oh, I'm the author of either six books or eight books. I don't really know if you count those two. So what has been the process for you? You don't work with ghostwriters on all the other ones, or you do, or how does that work?
I work with a fella named Mike Lynch, and trying to think of, like, I guess ghostwriter has kind of a negative connotation to it. He's an assembler of the thoughts that I regurgitate on a daily basis. And so our process is, he's not even in California. He's in Massachusetts. And he is a guy that I've written with in different capacities for a while. And so he listens to my podcast on a daily basis, and he starts pulling things that I've said, ideas, you know, sort of spontaneous riffing on, mostly that's where my ideas come from, is this sort of pontificating on something or bloviating on something, and something interesting comes out. It's it's a little bit, I'm sorry, it's a little bit like panning for gold, which is you go through a lot of silt and sand and eventually get to a little nugget of something that has some value. And then he starts kind of assembling it. He starts putting it in different places and adding and subtracting. And then at some point, we start having these daily conversations, like, here's what I got, here's what I'm thinking about. And so for me, especially living in LA pre-pandemic, I would say to him, hey, I am driving to the Comedy Store from my house tonight on Saturday night. I got to be there for an 8 o'clock set. I'm going to get my car at 7. It's going to be 10 o'clock your time. You want me to call you when I get in the car? He said, call me when I get in the car. I'd call him. And we'd work the book, and also the process is better because he'd be reading it out loud to me and I'd be hearing it versus reading it. I'm much better at hearing it. And then I'd get to the Comedy Store and I'd say to him, I'm going to go up, you know, do a 20-minute set. I can be back with you in half an hour, 40 minutes. He'd go, okay, call me when you get back in the car. Get back in the car, drive back to La Cunada from Hollywood, work on again. If I had a road trip or it's going to be somewhere for a while, we put it on the calendar. Here's 2 hours. I got to go to San Diego to do a corporate gig or whatever. I'll be in the car for 2 hours. Let's do it. And that's how we do it.
Dare I say that sounds pretty fun? I would say that sounds like the most fun book writing experience I've ever heard of.
I'll tell you this. You don't get writer's block or whatever that is. You don't find yourself doing like what they do in movies where you sit down, you bang out a paragraph and then you erase it. And then you bang out another paragraph and you erase it. It's very functional. It's highly functional. It's like, it's really pragmatic. It's symbiotic. Like, I talk, he grabs. Once you start getting an outline of the book, then you realize almost everything you say will fall into this chapter or that chapter. And it's very collaborative and it moves fast. Like, look, a lot of people can't afford to do it that way. It's not free. I don't get to keep all the money. I break off a good chunk and give it to him. But if you're willing to do that, then it's a very good process. But also that person has to be good. They have to have your voice in their head.
And so, and was he somebody who came to you because he was a listener? You have your crew. He's just like a member of the Corolla crew, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's you've oversimplified it a little, which is completely fine. Yes, he's a member of the crew. And we've been working together for years.
So, okay. So if the podcast focuses on book launches, what do you do when you're launching a book? I mean, kind of, you just tell your legions of listeners and they go buy it. But again, I bet I'm oversimplifying a much more complicated process. So how do you approach it? What do you do when launching a book?
I talk about it on my podcast, and anyone who will have me, like you. Thank you.
I mean, you really are hustling it. You're coming on my podcast.
I will start to play little clips of the audiobook that we record in the studio where I'm sitting right now. So we get to keep the whole recording of the audiobook in-house, which is just like the writing of the text of the book. It makes it a lot easier when you can go to the place where you work and do it kind of on your schedule with a hard out at the end, but still it's on your time. And we start playing little clips of it in the podcast and send it out to some of the more notable people I know to get blurbs for it, and that, you know, the usual wiggle. And at some point they'll start setting up a little press junket and that kind of stuff. It's nothing groundbreaking. You know, I don't know that you're going to sell a book based on a press junket. People need to read your book, like your book, recommend your book, and share your book. I can't imagine another way of doing it.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about, like, if I think about what I read, I only read because somebody told me to, or because I'm a fan or a friend of the person.
Well, that's an interesting point. Have you ever read a book where you saw the person talking about it on a TV show and bought that book? Or if you have done it that way, isn't it a much smaller number than the number of books you've read because folks who you respect have recommended this book to you?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like there's this marketing rule of, I think it's 7 or 8. You have to have heard of something 7 or 8 times. If you don't know the person, for it to even resonate. So it's like, if you go on the Today Show, okay, cool. Someone has to hear about you 6 more times to even buy your book. So that's why something like people like you who have this built-in audience, like that's how you're going to sell books, not by going on a TV show, you know?
Yeah. I, you know, I agree. And it's sort of like this pandemic thing, which is, we don't really know exactly how it works. So we're just going to wear masks and wipe shit down and like not go to any basketball games. And I don't know if it works. I don't know what works, what doesn't work. I just know this is sort of the protocol. And it's kind of that way with books. Like, you do this show, you do this radio junket, you talk to this guy, you do that. And that's just sort of what you do. And you go, well, let's really try to define which one works or what's fertile. And the answer is, we don't really know. Just do everything. And how could it hurt?
I will say, you are the very first, and congratulations on being able to compare the book publishing process to the pandemic. Yes, the first.
Thank you.
It's not wrong. It's not untrue. So, have all of your books been New York Times bestsellers? So it's safe to say the process is working?
Yes and no. I think 3 out of the 4 have been New York Times bestsellers, as I recall. I know 2, maybe 3, but not all 4. 3 out of 4.
It's a pretty good record. I'm not a mathematician, but that's a good percentage. And how has your publishing experience changed? I mean, this first one, you've switched publishers, right?
Right.
How has publishing, has it changed over the past decade that you've been in it?
You know, it's funny. Yeah, a little like insight into my wiring. I oftentimes don't know the name of my publisher. And the reason I don't know the name oftentimes is because it's not important to me. What's important is the product. And I'm lazy or something. I have this weird process where I'm only interested in things I can control. And if I can't control them, I God's honest, you'd have to look up to see who published my last book. Because I honestly don't know. But Crown, maybe?
Well, first of all, they all swallow each other up, so they all have different names all the time.
That's my take. To me, it's academic. My thing is, I'm going to write a good book. It's going to be edgy. It's going to be funny, and so it'll be thought provoking, and it'll be accurate. And then I'm just going to push it out there, and we'll see if everyone makes their money back, and we'll see how it works.
Here's what I'm going to tell you why I believe you. I had been on your show 3 times and then saw you, and I was like, hey, Adam. And you basically said to me, I don't know your name because I only learn the things that are kind of relevant. You said something like that. It made me not feel bad at all. I was like, oh, okay, cool. I don't have to feel bad about that.
When did I say that?
I saw you. We were in a green room at HLN, like back when Drew had his show there. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty refreshing because I was basically like, do you remember me? I've been on your show. And you were like, no, but don't take it personally.
I don't know. I understand I have a wiring that's off-putting to many, many people. Crown published the older books, and then more recently it was HarperCollins, I guess. So says the screen that Matt is written in front of. So here's the thing. I somehow have decided that there's certain things I need to know and then certain things I don't need to know. And if I decide, and sometimes it can be arbitrary, but if I decide I don't need to know it, then I don't need to know it. Like, I don't know any of the names. I have twins that just graduated from the 8th grade. I have no idea what any of their teachers' names were. And the reason I have no idea is because I don't need to know it.
Right.
I need, but also I only have a certain amount of room in my head and I have a lot of stuff I want to know. So I somehow just decided that writing a book is important and coming up with thoughts that are going to go into that book is important. But the name of the publisher for that book is not important. Now, if I was doing a radio junket, I would write it down on a pad and put it in front of me so I could glance down and see it. And then after that, I would forget about it again.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all like that. What's refreshing about you is that you just say you're like that, as opposed to people who are like, yeah. No, I totally know. You know what I mean? You're not faking it.
I guess. I mean, I feel that way with a lot of time with birthdays and stuff like that. Like, I don't know. I'm not wired for, I guess, not trivia. I like trivia, but things that don't feel like they will benefit me or my family or the what have you. I'm also not a big, like, if you and I were going to meet for dinner and you were 15 minutes late and you came in to the restaurant, we're like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I just go, sit down. I'm not interested in, well, we don't have to do this part where you tell me why you were late.
Right.
You're late. You're 15 minutes late. I don't even know why. I understand you feel bad about it. Let's order.
Yeah, like it less than, not irrelevant information, but less than relevant information is, I feel like.
Well, also, if you could give me information that could affect you being late, like if you could give me information and I could go back and use it to not make you late, then I'd be all ears. But this is done. Not that you're late.
Right.
But as an example, it's a done deal to me. And let's move on to appetizers.
So about this book, in looking at it, would you say, I mean, it's sort of my cursory glance at your earlier books. It's most like your first book, right? Or is it?
Yes.
Not?
I'd say yes. Thanks for doing your homework. And I would say it's probably more like my first book than any other book I've written.
And is that because you felt like, hey, the world needs to hear this stuff now, again?
There was an element of the first book really resonated with people. I don't know why. I mean, it was a funny book, so I understand that people thought it was funny. It also had a lot of kind of truths kind of tough truths in it. So, and because the first book was sort of a, here's where we're going to be in 50 years. And then people kept kind of coming up to me and saying, well, it looks like we got there in 10 years, you know, or under, way under your prognostication of 50 years. So I sort of went, yeah, everyone liked that book. It's been 10 years since I wrote that book. And I also, that's my style in terms of, you know, writing a book about being a dad or writing an autobiography and or some version of that. That's fine. But my style would be more suited for, I'm just going to say everything I want to say in a book form. And that's what this book is.
And, you know, one other thing, this is kind of like going back to the conversation about these publishers who we can't remember. Why not publish yourself? You do everything yourself. Like your entire thing is like a media company. Why not just have Ace Publishing?
It's a good question. You have to, it's kind of a twofold answer. You have to kind of figure out how much stuff you want to do yourself, because the answer isn't going to be everything, you know, because it's like saying, I'm a carpenter, but I don't do everything myself, but I could because I have the skill set, you know, but it also at a certain point, how are you using your time? So, you know, I have a pool man, I have a gardener, it's all stuff I could do, but I'm trying to allocate my time a certain way. And it's true. People go, well, wouldn't you save a lot of money if you just did your own pool? And you go, yeah, I know, but I just, and it's not analogous exactly, but you have to kind of think like you do a podcast or you make documentaries or you sell Mangri or whatever, you do your stuff. But then every once in a while, someone wants to do a TV production and you're going to have a hosting gig and they're going to handle it, you know, and you can't, at least I can't sort of shoulder everything all the time. It has to be some allocations to others on occasion. And in this particular case, my partner, Mike Lynch, was looking to get from, he's a working as a social worker therapist to starting his own business and getting his own office and hanging his shingle out. And he needed money to get an office, to buy furniture, to start a business, and so on and so forth. And so part of it was an eye toward, let me see if I can get you paid. And if we did it your way, which is a good idea, he wouldn't have gotten paid till I got paid or whenever the money came in.
But he would make a lot more. I do think it's fascinating that I would not think the co-author of I'm Your Emotional Support Animal would necessarily be a social worker. That's just interesting.
Yeah, therapists, you know, social worker therapists now. It is. He and I work well together because we do have a strong sort of psychological bent and an interest, and we lean that way. I don't think people think of me that way, but I do. They think of me as kind of a blue collar, you know, dude who, you know, says what he thinks and thinks what he means or says or whatever the fuck they think. But for me, I'm very interested in the human condition, psychology, motivation. It's where most of my comedy comes from. And Mike is obviously very interested in that as well. He does it full time for a job. So when he and I get together to kind of approach a subject, it goes a little beyond what's funny. You know, we're trying to kind of figure out what's true and how people work and what motivates people. And then how do we find the comedy? How do we find that sort of psychological truth? And then where's the comedy in that? And when you find truths, sort of emotional, psychological truths, you will find a lot of comedy. That's why all the best comedians are sort of you know, that's why people are going, he's right, he's right. That's the way my wife thinks, you know, or that's the way my husband acts. You know, those are the truths. Those are, if it doesn't ring true psychologically, it's not really funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. This has been fantastic. Now, if you had to give somebody who's not Adam Carolla tips for what they should do to launch a book, what would they be?
I'm trying to think about launching a book versus creating a book. I'll answer it at some point in this dissertation, but I'm very interested in the process and the product versus the outcome. And I think people get a little fixated on the outcome, you know, like I'll write a book as long as I know it's going to be a New York Times bestseller. And it's like, well, then everyone would write a book. There are no guarantees. You should write a book because you would like to write a book, or more importantly, because you have something to say or an idea you need to share. If you're just writing the book because you want to get on this list or get paid or get laid or get whatever, then maybe you shouldn't be writing a book. So my feeling is it's a lot easier to push a product if the product is really strong, you know? So you could say, what's the best way to launch a line of t-shirts, men's t-shirts? And I'd go, I don't know, how good's the t-shirt? Like, is it a killer t-shirt? Tell me why someone would need this t-shirt. I got a drawer full of t-shirts, you know? So in a world where everyone has a drawer full of t-shirts and a shelf full of books, why do we need your book? And write that book, create that book, create that product. And then, you know, once you do that, it's everything you can access. You know, for me, I know Jimmy Kimmel and Howard Stern, so perhaps I can go talk about it on their program. But not everyone knows Jimmy Kimmel and Howard Stern, so you can't talk about it on their program. But maybe there are other people you know. And I get it. It'd be much nicer just to go on Howard Stern and talk about it than it would be to go on a podcast with 8 listeners and talk about it. But that's where you have to start. I mean, you can obviously only do it to whatever. And by the way, I couldn't go on, I don't know, I'm trying to think where you would like to sell a book. I probably couldn't go on Stephen Colbert's show and do it. I don't get to go everywhere I want to go and talk about it, but I could go on Tucker Carlson's show and talk about it. So you have to kind of figure out, like, well, where could you go? Who would have you? And, you know, be persistent. But again, if the product's not there, it's all going to be a moot point anyway, because it's mostly all word of mouth.
Yeah. Excellent. That's perfect. So thank you, Adam. Thank you so much for your time. Listeners, go grab I'm Your Emotional Support Animal. I'm assuming it's wherever people can buy books. Maybe bookstores will be open by the time they hear this.
They, wherever you get books, that's where you get it.
Okay, awesome. Thanks again, Adam. I really appreciate you.
Thanks, Anna.